Hello and welcome to the DC Insider Employer Update Podcast. This podcast updates you with the expertise and current insight of the Washington, D.C.-based attorneys from the Fortney Scott Law Firm. Each episode highlights the most important issues and analysis that employers need to know in order to understand and react to key federal developments affecting their business. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as legal advice on any subject matter. Now let's turn it over to our host, Pete Waltz.
Thanks, Valerie. Welcome again, everyone, to the DC Insider Update. Joining us again for this week's roundup, we have David Fortney. David, how are you?
I'm great. Peter, it's great to be with you again.
Great. And Bert, what's going on with you? How are you today?
Hi, Pete. Looking forward to it. Thanks for being here.
And last but not least, Nita Beecher. Nita, welcome back.
Thank you. And we're looking forward to today's podcast.
So are we. So let's get started with the rundown. Nita, this week, I'd like you to kick it off, if you would. Give us a rundown of what happened last week.
Well, I think the most important thing for us to talk about is COVID. COVID is surging again. We have 38 states with an increase. And the northern tier of states seems to be especially bad. Michigan, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, where you're going, South Dakota, Maine, New Hampshire, Delaware, Maryland, all of these states are seeing an increase, as well as Florida. And I think it's really a crucial time because we have these variants. Meanwhile, while 75% of older workers or older people generally have received vaccines, 78.5 million Americans are fully vaccinated. 125 million have at least one shot. And yet we seem to be running in potentially to a wall of this new variant. On the other hand, we do have a problem with the J&J vaccine. They did pause that vaccine because of a rare blood clotting disorder that six women developed. So that's going to slow things down quite a bit.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, this COVID is one day we're up, one day we're down, and I think we're going to be with it for a while. Bert, let's jump over to some of the union issues happening, particularly the Amazon election. What happened there?
Yeah, well, that's the story that dominated the headlines for weeks, and we finally got the result. It was an absolute rout, a 70-30 victory for the employer. The ramifications for union organizing, I think, are already being felt within the labor movement. Insofar as how this will impact the very pro-union Biden administrative agenda, it's going to take a while for us to figure it out, but please stay tuned. We're going to come back to this topic.
Speaking about agenda and administration, David, any new seats filled on the agencies? Fill us in.
Yeah. Thanks, Pete. There are three nominees that I've been tracking pretty carefully. First, we now have a nominee to head OSHA. That's Doug Parker, and he comes from California. That's what he's been doing before. He's been running Cal OSHA. So that is a strong signal that we're, as predicted, going to have a very strong OSHA agency. Second, the vote, the pending vote on the Deputy Secretary of Labor, Julie Hsu. She's scheduled for a committee vote on April 21st. It'll be a close vote. Likely she will be confirmed, probably along a party line. Finally, the Department of Justice civil rights nominee, Kristen Clark. She had her hearing. Clark received a lot of negative attention, surprisingly, in my opinion, from the Republicans, but she's been a pretty outspoken critic. If confirmed, be the first Black woman to head the U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights Division. A really important job.
Wow, that's an historic move for sure. Let's cover the budget that Biden's been working on, the 2022 budget. Nita, where do we stand with that?
Well, the most important thing about what President Biden has sent over to the Senate is that he wants a 14% increase in DOL funding, which will affect employers because $2.1 billion, which is a 17% increase, is going to be for enforcement, wage and hour, OSHA, OFCCP. In addition, he wants budget hikes for all of the offices of civil rights for all the major departments, ag, transportation, and so forth. So I think we can see that Biden is putting the money where his mouth is.
Speaking of OSCCP, I know there was a verification plan out there we wanted to get an update on. David, any movement there?
Yeah, I do want to touch on this briefly because I'm worried that federal contractors particularly are not paying enough attention to what this obligation is going to be. OFCCP, with all this new money, has already loaded up and put on its website the portal, and every federal contractor is going to have to verify, subject to the penalties of perjury, that they are in compliance. We're going to unpack that in a future program, but that's a big deal that's flying way under the radar.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Well, let's move on to the transition to work. You know, a lot of things are still happening. We've still got COVID. We've still got major issues. Lots of things happening in government, but people are going to go back to work. Let's understand some of the major issues that returning to work have to do, particularly around the vaccine or mandating the vaccine. Any other requirements? Bert, help us out here if you can. Open that discussion on what are we dealing with return to work issues?
Pete, you're leading me into the lion's den. This is the hottest topic for everybody. There is enormous pressure from the employers to want to get back to work. However, despite all that pressure, it's only about 25% of businesses actually have people at their business. That's according to the Castle Card people who, you know, the door swipes at the doors. So despite the pressure, we're not seeing this great infusion of workers coming back to work. But the main issue that's confronting employers is whether or not they can mandate the vaccine. And frankly, I'm taking a kind of contrarian view here. There's a lot of stuff in the press saying, well, if you're an at-will employer, you can do what you want. But the fact is, OSHA, CDC, FDA have not yet given the green light on this. The EEOC is still hedging. It seems to me that it's a very close call as to whether an employer has the right, because the vaccine is still an emergency usage approval. Many states are now getting into the action. Some states like California are saying, even in those few situations and healthcare situations where you can mandate the vaccine, there's a whole series of procedures that you have to follow that may deter use of the vaccine. Some states are saying you're barred from mandating the vaccine. So we are in a very tense situation where there's enormous pressure from the business community to try to reopen, to get back to what people are thinking of as normal. But on the other hand, there are, I think, some legal and policy and practical matters militating against mandating vaccines, especially what Nita just talked about, the growing resistance based on pausing the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, pausing the AstraZeneca in Europe. David, I know you have a point on this.
The EEOC issued guidance early on, and it basically said that if you mandate a vaccine, it does not necessarily violate Title VII and the discrimination laws, as long as you make the required accommodations. It, however, is not an authorization. And I'm seeing many employers justify these mandates, saying the EEOC has said we're allowed to, or we're, it's proper to do so. That's a misreading of the EEOC's guidance.
David, thanks for that helpful update. Let's talk about what employers can do to incentivize things. Nita, any update there?
No, unfortunately. In February, a bunch of employer organizations asked the EEOC to provide guidance because under the ADA, there are limitations to how much employers can incentivize employees to do medical tests or take vaccines in this case. As of yesterday, there was a letter back from the EEOC saying they're working on it. But nevertheless, employers, because they'd rather not mandate it, they are in fact providing, as I think we've talked about before, they're giving people added days of vacation. They're providing money to them. There is still an open question whether that is legal under the EEOC's requirements as far as voluntary incentives.
Well, what about reluctant workers and other issues there, David? What do you think?
This is a growing problem. And honestly, I'm not sure that anyone has identified a silver bullet. Nita has touched on whether employers can mandate. Well, what about, you know, that's the stick. What about the carrot? How do you deal with the reluctant worker? Some people are anti-vaxxers, as we call them. Some just say, I don't have confidence in this vaccine. Employers are trying a variety of incentives and encouragement. And as the workplaces begin to reopen, can those that are reluctant be allowed to stay home? Can you force them to come in? Can you discipline them if they don't respond? These issues are still being actively sorted out. But I think a very important takeaway for employers, these issues need to be thought about before you totally reopen your workplace, because your workforce is probably consistent with the U.S. population. We're probably going to have 30% plus that are quite different.
David, I just want to point out that as we mentioned last week, and I just saw a new survey, 40% of Marines refuse to take the vaccine, as in addition to the notice we talked about last week, a third overall of the military.
Well, you know, I've got to tell you, the fact that there was this pause from the J&J vaccine, which incidentally, is the vaccine that's intended to be used throughout the whole third world because it's single shot and easily stored. This just gives more fuel to the fire of resistance. And it's very unfortunate, but it's happening. And I think the fact that there is anti-vax resistance is being abetted by the fact that the CDC is being hyper careful.
Those who don't know, Bert is the general counsel for the Washington Performing Arts Society. And one of his many duties is to help advise the theater world in the greater Washington, D.C. area on how to respond to this, which has been pandemic and a great challenge. Bert, there's been some announcements by the Kennedy Center that they are, in fact, going to reopen, which seems a little contrary to a lot of the trends we're seeing in other workplaces and settings.
That caught a lot of people by surprise, but you can understand, and you probably read stories about Broadway being in the same situation. Of all of the businesses in America that have been decimated by the pandemic, the entertainment industry probably is first, because you have to have large amounts of people in enclosed spaces for long periods of time. And the theater industry, the music industry is desperate to try to generate revenue. The Kennedy Center has opened a full panoply of performances starting in August. And frankly, many people in the arts community are wondering whether they'll be able to pull it off, because the key issue in all of this has nothing to do with the government. It has to do with audience anxiety. They always say the theater is the great bellwether, because you've got to put your money down to walk in the door. And whether people will do so remains to be seen. The same is true for colleges and universities, although they're a bit different. They have a health history of mandating vaccines for measles, mumps, meningitis, but they're also permitting people to attend remotely. So it's not an absolute mandate. And just to put the final touch for the theaters, that, you know, there's a lot of wish in this rather than fact. As Shakespeare put it, the wish is father to the thought.
Shakespeare, here we go with Dr. Fishman, Professor Emeritus, bringing in Shakespeare. Love it. Hey, let's move on to issues with employees. And we've talked a lot about employers' issues and what we're asking about for that. But Nita, tell us what some of the issues with employees are.
Well, if you're going to bring people back into the workplace, in addition, let's say you're not going to mandate, even you're going to have people who both have been vaccinated and not vaccinated. Are you going to require that they mask? How are you going to socially distance them? I just saw a note that people are Zooming from one office to another. Why come in the office if you're going to Zoom? We need guidance from OSHA. We need guidance from CDC, and we need guidance from the EEOC. How are we going to structure the restrooms, break rooms? Are we going to use staggered shifts? Are you going to allow vaccinated people to use the break room and not the non-vaccinated, and so forth? So I think that we're going to end up with a hybrid workplace. I think that's what a lot of employers are looking to do.
Well, you know, for some people, the hybrid workplace is, rather than the best, is the worst of both worlds. A lot of employers believe that face-to-face collaboration is one of the sources of innovation. They believe it's the source of creating a community among their workforce. But how do you do it? It's very complicated. If you say, choose whatever day you want, then probably you're going to have a lot of people out on Monday and Friday, and you won't have that synergy. You won't have that core of workers. If you mandate when people come to work, then you're losing this voluntarism, which making work from home so attractive. So it is very complicated. And the point that you have to make is you must start planning about how you're going to do this if and when it is possible to bring people in.
Another complication is that as employers look at this, so we've got the issues of from the employee standpoint that you guys have laid out for us, but the rules themselves, that the environments are quite different. When we started this pandemic, we used to talk about states. We still do sometimes. But more often than not, we're talking about geographic regions, specific cities, et cetera. And we know, Nita highlighted for us those breakouts, those hot areas. Those hot areas now are often by region. That's a nightmare when you're a national employer. That means I can't set a U.S. policy. I can't set a Southeast policy. I can't necessarily even set a Florida policy because it depends on what county and where I'm located. That needs to be taken into account. Also, we quickly are developing vaccination deserts and oases, as well as outbreaks. It's a very complicated landscape for an employer. And I think most employers are thoughtfully, you know, dialing it back and implementing on a very localized basis based on conditions and state requirements.
So what about employees that don't want to go back to the workplace? Nita, what are we doing there?
Well, that's the most difficult one. And you've got to figure out as an employer is who needs to come into the office. And what are you going to do if they say, hey, I've been working great from home over a year now. I don't think I really need to come into the office. You know, I can Zoom in if I need to be there. And employers simply have to decide, are they going to draw the line and say, no, if you don't come into the office, then we're going to fire you. There's a separate issue, which is those who have religious objections, whether to the vaccine in many cases and or they have disability issues. Those have to be handled. The EEOC has provided us with a lot of guidance around that. But that's going to be very tricky, especially if we have potentially 25 to 30% of the population who's refusing to get a vaccine. Bert, what do you think?
Well, I think the thing that I keep coming back to is we are now deep into the second year of the COVID outbreak, and it is still the number one issue on the mind of employers and employees. In fact, it is still the leading story in every newspaper in this country. And I have a feeling that it's going to continue for some considerable period.
So it sounds like lots going on there that just begs for more discussion down the road here. But let's try and narrow this down for our audience and cover some of the key points. If each of you can share with me one key point you think employers need to keep in mind as it relates to returning to work. David, let's start with you.
I think in the next 30 days, we're going to have an OSHA emergency temporary standard issued. And number two, I think that we're going to have further guidance from the EEOC. So two agency actions that will help inform how to proceed in these matters.
Bert, what's your follow-up?
Well, let me pick up from that. If, in fact, those happen, employers that wish to reopen, say, in June or July, have to start planning now. It is going to be a much more complicated effort than we thought even 2 months ago. Anita has just told us why, with resistance, with disability, with religion. I would say if you're going to start to reopen, start thinking about it now.
Anita, bring it home for us, if you would. What's your key point?
Well, finally, you need to decide how you're going to handle those employees who don't want to come back to the office. What are you going to do with them? How are you going to handle religious or disability issues? And you need to get that in place right now so employees know.
Well, thanks for that update, everybody. Those are great takeaways for employers reopening their workplace. In our update next week, we'll focus on key developments by the federal agencies that employers need to know, including the new verification of federal contractors that'll have to file with the OFCCP. Valerie, that's it for this week. Take us home.
Thanks, everyone. We look forward to the next update. For those that would like to connect with any of the lawyers from Fortney Scott, please reach out to them directly by visiting fortneyscott.com. On the website, you can also listen to previous podcast episodes, as well as pick up your copy of the DC Insider Report and sign up for future updates. Thanks so much for listening.